So 172 of the Cricket Her Weekly. Believe it or not, in the background, that is Lords. Lights are off. It's been an evening, Sid. And much like an Alice Capsey innings, this episode is going to be a bit bonkers.
Yeah, it's 11:30 at night. We're about to get kicked out of the press centre at Lords. But just before we do, we wanted to come and record our episode. So here we are, and gosh, what an evening it's been. What a week it's been in London. We've had two games in London. How long is it since we've had two games in London? I mean, it's just like, that's just unprecedented. And they both, we broke the attendance record at the Oval earlier in the week, and it was broken again today at Lords. 21,000 people here at Lords. It's been a fantastic week, and totally capped off by Alice Capsey, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to say that we seem to make a habit of recording videos very late after late finishes at Lords that are slightly bonkers and unexpected. This one obviously had a happier ending for England than the one last summer that wrapped up the ODI series against India, which we won't talk about.
Don't mention the man, Ken.
Oh dear. anyway, Alice Capsey. Oh wow. She's had, as you tweeted, she's had a difficult few innings for England. It's not been the easiest summer for her. Obviously didn't get into the 11 for the test, etc. But my goodness, when she comes off, she does things that only Alice Capsey can do. Those two sweet sixes that they were just effortless, weren't they? That she just nailed. They were kind of sloggy, but it was effortless, wasn't it?
Well, when you can slog the ball that far, who cares? I mean, it was just, you know, the second one just went like 4 or 5 seats back into the stand. And sadly, it was one of the empty stands. Unfortunately, there was like about two empty stands here because they'd obviously kept two of them closed because they knew it wasn't going to be completely full. What can I say? She's just box office, and the crowd just like got so much behind her. They were just roaring it. It was just the most exciting thing that you've seen. And you know, she's just England's biggest asset in terms of like the crowd's response. Every single person here is going to go home tonight remembering Alice Capsey, yeah. Remembering her name. Every single person that was here tonight will want to come back again to see Alice Capsey. And how marvellous is that?
And it's like she really thrives on these big occasions, isn't it? Because obviously we saw her do similar at Lords in the first year of the 100 when she was kind of an unknown 16-year-old coming out to bat for the first time at this iconic ground in front of what was a very big crowd then of 15,000 or so. And she hit a 50 and she didn't quite get the 50 today. She'd obviously be annoyed about that because there was that kind of... that clattering of wickets at the end there, Sid. Because I thought I'm going to have to do a frantic rewrite here. Oh my goodness, what did you think?
Yeah, no, you were having to file on time for The Guardian. I think you probably missed the first edition, didn't you? Because
I think so.
You were trying to get in time for the second edition. But at the point they needed two runs, I was still pretty confident they were going to do it because at the end of the day, well, they were certainly going to get one. You can't not get one run off four balls.
You can, it's Australia.
But, you know, Danny Gibson came out and, you know, she held her knife, and that was so important as well. Danny Gibson has had a pretty decent couple of games for England, and I think there's huge positives for England in terms of Danny Gibson's future. I wrote a little bit about this in my piece, so let's talk a bit about her, shall we? Because,
yeah.
You know, what we've seen over the last few days, well, we've seen Matt Sivabrunt is kind of creaking a bit. We saw her warming up in a pair of shorts earlier, and she's got a lot of strapping on her knee. She's definitely not 100%. She's not quite hitting the ball. I mean, she was okay, but she's not quite hitting the ball as sweetly as, you know, she has done in the past.
And I felt like she almost had to bowl one over too many today. Because she had three good overs and then the fourth one obviously got smashed by Elise Perry, and there was a moment at which Nat fell to the ground sort of clutching her knee, and you thought, hang on, really, she needs to only be bowling two or three overs. But the way that England have set their team up and selected their team, they're doing it like she has to bowl her full four over allocation.
Yeah, I mean, actually, in a way they didn't need to, because Gibson did have an over left over at the end, but I'm not sure if the sums quite worked out like that in terms of like who had the overs left at that point. But yeah, so what we're seeing is that, you know, are we seeing a little bit of a changing of the guard, maybe, that Danny Gibson is going to be the one that replaces Nat Siver as the sort of seam bowling all-rounder, you know, and she bowled three competent overs again today. You know, she hasn't really done a lot wrong. You know, she's not totally on the money. The slower ball, you know, she's got the bravery to bowl the slower ball in a big international setting out there, and that in itself is a positive. I mean, the confidence to come out and do that, but didn't always quite come off. You know, she's definitely not the best bowling option England could be picking. She's probably not the best batting option England could be picking as well. But in terms of the future, in terms of building that next Nat Sivabunt, that next bowling all-rounder that England are going to need for the next 10 years, a real positive in terms of her achievements this series.
I think that people are going to think that's a bit controversial, Sid, because Nat Sivabunt is definitely still at the height of her powers with the bat. So I think we should probably make it clear that you're not saying that Nat Sivabunt is somehow on her last legs, but we're just saying that at the moment England are making her saddle a lot of responsibility with the ball, and perhaps it would be good for her to be able to focus a little bit more on her batting.
Yeah, and we know, in the same way as we've talked a lot about captaincy transition, maybe we also need to think about, you know, all-round transition. Yeah. And Nat Sivabunt's 31, so she's not a spring chicken anymore, and she obviously is starting to get the little niggles that you start to get at that age. So, you know, she's, you know, I mean, fingers crossed that she's got 3 or 4 years left. But, you know, we need to start thinking about that next generation.
Just on the Gibson point, I haven't read your piece yet, so I don't know if you say this, but thought that Lauren Bell made a really good point in the press conference just now, because she said, actually, the way that Danny Gibson came out and facing up to her first ball and they needed 2 runs and she decided to pull out the reverse sweep, that is the way this England team are kind of playing against Australia. Because Danny Gibson was just like, well, you know, it's a pressure situation. We've just lost some wickets. We only need 2 runs. But sod it. I think I can nail this reverse sweep. I'm going to do it. And she did it
well. Yeah.
And I just thought that was interesting and kind of almost typified the approach of England against Australia. And, you know, I have to say, Sid, that actually a few weeks ago or months ago, whenever it was, when we were talking about predictions for the Ashes, we'd been quite scathing and we'd been saying, we don't think it's going to be as competitive as everyone else is saying. We can't see England going toe-to-toe with Australia. And a lot of this kind of talk about John Ball and fearless cricket is just nonsense. But haven't we seen that the last couple of matches? And haven't we seen this series that me and you have been wrong?
Yeah, I guess we have this, but I mean, England have won the T20 series,
yeah.
You know, and it's been a long time since Australia have lost a series. So, you know, they have gone toe-to-toe with them. And, you know, I mean, let's see what happens going into the ODI series. I mean, if you ask me still about the ODI series, I'd still say the odds are that Australia win all 3 games. I think that will be a tougher format for England, because, you know, you can't just quite go out and smash it in the way Ice Capsy did today in an ODI. But, you know, let's see. Come on, England, prove me wrong.
Well, yeah, but also in a way, I've been thinking about this and even before today, even after seeing them beat Australia at the Oval, and also the fact that at the Edgbaston game and in the test at Trent Bridge, you just really did still feel like England were competing with Australia in a way that they haven't the last like 3 Ashes series or something, haven't really competed since 2014 when we won. It's all been downhill since there. And so actually, you know, maybe they won't win the Ashes. I still think it's much more likely that Australia will win the Ashes. But England have kind of already won, haven't they, by winning this T20 series? I know that there's this sort of, you know, there will be a hollowness about it if Australia do then go on and beat them in the ODIs and kind of, you know, that could yet still happen. But I just feel really excited. You know, you talk about a changing of the guard in terms of players, but it feels like we're seeing a changing of the guard in terms of this Australia is not infallible. This Australia is not kind of Meg Lanning's, undefeatable team.
Undefeatable winning machine.
Yeah. You
know, that's something does seem to have slipped a bit. And, you know, it's like, Beth Mooney has been good, but she hasn't been quite the Beth Mooney, you know, that we've seen at her absolute peak. Ash Gardner, you know, again, she's done the business. Look at her bowling in the test, you know, and she scored another 30-odd runs today. But today, she scored 30-odd runs, but she didn't push on towards the 50-60 score that Australia could really have done with. Because it was still a close match. If Australia had put another 15 runs on the board, and they could have won out there tonight.
Yeah. And I will add to that we do seem to be seeing that the Megan Shute, that was always Australia's kind of reliable standby, and in terms of seam bowling, is not the Megan Shute of 3 or 4 years ago, who was just that reliable, consistent bowler. And if Australia have had one weakness over these past few years, it's been in seam bowling. And they are really feeling that now, because Megan Shute does appear to be perhaps not performing in the way that they would have hoped that she would.
Yeah, a couple of key wickets today, but she also got knocked around again, yeah. You know, after having got severely battered at the Oval. So, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, perhaps that we're seeing her coming towards the end of her time, and, you know, that's maybe a decision that Australia are going to have to look at, and, you know, whether they've got the bowling to bring out. I mean, you know, I think they'll go home from this tour with a few concerns, because, of course, Taylor Vlemmick, she's off home now. They've decided that, you know, that the couple of games that she played in the A series are all that she can cope with. In fact, she's ended up with another injury, hasn't she? So, you know, the foot's held up, but is it the shoulder that's gone again now? So, you know, and that they have been absolutely desperate. You know, they were, you know, talking about, you know, Vlemmick would be worth playing even if she could only bowl four or five overs in the ODI series. But obviously, that's not going to happen
for her now.
So.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's going to be a challenge for them.
Yeah, and the other thing that we did get Shelley Nitschke in the press conference just now, who's obviously the head coach, and I did say, you're missing Meg Lanning, because I was trying to put my finger on what it is that's different about this Australia, and that's the obvious thing, isn't it?
And she did she have to say?
Well, she said, of course we are, basically. Okay. You know, yes. What? How could we not miss her? She's Meg Lanning, for goodness sake. She didn't really say anything more insightful than that, but she did agree that is something they're missing. And I think we actually talked about this in last week's episode, didn't we, about Alyssa Healy perhaps struggling to do everything, to cope with the burden of captaincy, as well as everything else that she's trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, Alyssa Healy, the last two games, she looked absolutely brilliant the last two games. She struck the ball more cleanly than anyone else in the Australia lineup. You know, when she's hitting the ball, she looks fantastic. But then, you know, on both occasions, she's actually gotten out reasonably early, and, you know, therefore has had to leave the work to other people.
Okay, so we're moving on to the ODIs now.
Breathe.
They're all three sold out, so it's really exciting. I was just having a chat with Katia Whitney from Wisden Cricket Monthly, and we were talking about the scheduling. And there has been a little bit of a debate about this, hasn't there? But I just think that you can't really argue with the way in which they have aligned these two series. And the Women's Ashes really does seem to have captured the attention of people who would more ordinarily just be paying attention to men's cricket.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from what we've heard, I mean, you know, we've heard from colleagues at Sky, we've heard from colleagues in the newspapers that their numbers are all up.
Yeah.
You know, and we've seen the crowds here, and we've you know, you can see people reacting to it, you can see people talking about it, and, you know, the England's decision to do this sort of joint marketing campaign and to follow the same sort of model in marketing the Ashes as they followed in the 100, which is almost a sort of the two teams, one competition thing, you know, has just been an absolutely outstanding success, hasn't it?
Yeah, and it's not something that I like admitting to in a way, because I obviously want women's cricket to stand on its own two feet and to not feel tied to the men's game. But I just think whoever conceived of this ad campaign, it's been executed incredibly well. And you can't argue with the results in terms of these crowds. They're nice crowds. They are different crowds to men's cricket. I think, you know, that's very obvious as you walk round, and we're not seeing a load of drunken idiots. They do have more of a family feel, and that's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, and the tickets are much better value. Yeah. So the ticket, you know, and that maybe that explains why the families are coming, because to take a family of four to these games, you know, you're talking about what is sort of £80 all in, whereas to take a family of four to one of the men's games, you're probably talking about a couple of £100 all in, and that's a huge difference.
More than that.
Yeah, so, you know, there is a cost factor potentially in there. But, you know, yeah, but they've been proper cricket crowds, right? And we've just seen people reacting to like the Barmy Army trumpeter at the Oval.
Yeah.
You know, people were just, you know, lapping that up, and it was fantastic to see.
Great. Well, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens after this Ashes series, isn't it? Because we have had some news about next summer's schedule. We've already got next summer's schedule, which is just insane. Because, you know, normally, like any other year, other than this year, we would have had the women's fixtures coming through in like March or April. I mean, last year when we were trying to book our wedding, we're going, well, there's not really anything we can do because you can't really book a wedding with like 6 weeks notice. And that's normally as much notice as we get about the international fixtures. Anyway, it's a good thing that we aren't getting married next summer, Sid, because we got married in May. And next summer, England are playing an international series against Pakistan in May. And then they are going on in June and July, I think it is, to play a series against New Zealand. Obviously, there is a good reason for that. They can't play any international cricket in September because it's going to be the World Cup in like maybe late September, October. We don't have the exact dates yet, but that's the ICC's window for it. So there's presumably then going to be some kind of a warm-up series in September, Sid?
Yeah, I mean, you would imagine, we don't have any inside information on this, but you would imagine India is the probable destination where perhaps a tri series in India.
Yeah.
So it's the T20 World Cup in Bangladesh, which is scheduled September to October. Mm. So we're thinking probably the last week in September, the first week or two in October is likely. So we think that England probably fly to India, maybe a warm-up tri series, you know, possibly with Australia. That would be fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But they'll obviously will want to be warming up, you know, in that vicinity,
yeah,
and then go on to Bangladesh for that World Cup. So that's the explanation for why there's no games in September, as they have been for the past few years. But it means we've got a hugely congested calendar in the first bit of the year.
Yeah.
And that also has implications for the domestic game, doesn't it? Because, yeah, this week and the last couple of weeks in the RHF have been interesting because we've had England and England A playing. That's taken a lot of players out of the RHF. We've seen a load of debuts in the RHF, and we've seen another couple of unexpected results. We won't talk about the two Vipers results. Vipers lost again. And who did they lose to, Raf?
Vipers lost to Sunrisers.
Again.
And then they tied against the Thunder. And Sid is like, you know, practically, again, thinking about burning a ceremonial burning of his Vipers shirt.
I'm not.
No, but you're right that it changes things. It actually potentially makes the regional game a bit more interesting. Now, one of the things that we've seen over the last couple of weeks is England players who have been sort of released or have asked to be released from the squad who are going in and then making a real difference. You know, Tammy Beaumont going, I'm going to spend hours on a train where I don't even have a seat in order to go and play for Blaze and hit the winning innings. Lauren Winfield-Hill, she was in Edgbaston last Saturday. She then said to John Lewis, please can I go and play for the Diamonds on Sunday? And she drove for however many hundred miles it was, and then got up the next day early, made a century, and then was absolutely exhausted at the end of it.
Yeah, she's been back here as part of the England squad. Izzy Wong played yesterday, and she was back here with England as well. I mean, obviously she would have known that she wasn't in the match day 11, unless there'd been a last minute injury, she could have come in. But she was, you know, she was back here with the team today as well. So, you know, people putting a lot of miles in, but
yeah. But what we might potentially see next summer for the first time is that England players play no regional cricket whatsoever, because regional cricket happens in May, regional cricket happens in September. Neither of those windows are going to be ones where you know the England staff are going to be likely to be saying to players, oh, off you go and disappear.
Well, yeah, especially with the World Cup so close on the horizon, they're going to have to keep an eye on, real eye on players' workloads and, you know, ensure that they manage the workloads of all their players going through, because it's going to wind up being a very, very long summer. It's going to start in May, and then effectively that summer's going to end in mid-October after that T20 World Cup in Bangladesh.
Yeah, hopefully they get a rest in October, like we will.
Hopefully we will as well.
Exactly. No, because I'll be teaching full time. Anyway, the one other thing that has been talked about in relation to next summer's schedule is the fact that there is no test.
Yeah, so I know, I back of my mind, I've been hoping that, you know, we knew that New Zealand were going to be coming here, and I've been hoping that, obviously there's been a lot of talk about the fact that none of the current New Zealand team have ever played a test. Susie Bates has never played a test. Sophie Devine has never played a test. So I was really hoping that might creep into the calendar, but you think I was a bit naive in that hope, Raf?
Well, I mean, I'm not surprised to see no test in the schedule. And I can tell you exactly how the conversation will have gone. That sounds like I'm actually privy to the information. In my head, I know exactly how the conversation will have gone. The ECB will have approached New Zealand cricket and said, hello, you're coming to us next summer. Shall we have a test in the calendar? And New Zealand cricket will have gone, no. And the ECB will have gone, okay, see you next year. And that's how it will have gone. We know that New Zealand cricket are notoriously resistant to organising women's tests. They would argue that they haven't even got enough money to stage very many men's tests. So it's really disappointing. I'm not going to deny that, but I'm not at all surprised by it, because it's a continuation of an existing policy ultimately. And I guess perhaps it's a little bit disappointing in the sense that clearly the tests that New Zealand, that South Africa and India have recently played have not convinced New Zealand cricket that the time is now ripe for them to play some tests. So that is disappointing, but not surprising, as I say. It's perhaps a blessing in disguise if we think about like the busyness of the international calendar, as you've just described, next year. When would they even have found the time to fit this test in? I suppose they could have had it in April or February or sometime like that. No, I don't really think that. I obviously would really love New Zealand to be playing tests, but I'm not very surprised that that is the way the calendar has gone, unfortunately. I suppose we'll just have to try and hold out for whenever the next one might be for England after that. And apologies to any of our viewers/listeners in New Zealand, because it's a bit crap for you. If we were running the ICC, things would be a hell of a lot different. Should we wrap up there, Sid? Yeah. What a bonkers evening. Hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have, and hope you've enjoyed this episode. Bye for now.
Bye.